Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill, employee-owned and operated, and founded on the principle of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Eating Matters, where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. I'm your host, Jenna Liut, and we're broadcasting from Roberta's on Heritage Radio Network. Okay, so contrary to the show's tagline, we're going to take a little break from food policy in this particular episode and instead talk about the way high-performance athletes eat. Or at least how they used to eat in the 80s, especially compared to how they eat now. Joining me today to delve into this fascinating topic is one of my favorite human beings on the planet. That's right, it's my dad, Mike Liut. Dad, welcome to the show.
I got a frog in my throat. Could you get it out, please?
No, I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. Where did that come from?
What? That was not a frog sound. That was like an explosion.
Yeah, I have limited means here.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about athletes and food. Yeah.
If you want.
That's what we're talking about. Have you been on radio before?
Many times.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you're an old pro?
Well, it's been a long time.
But you don't get to wear the makeup, though, like you do when you're on TV.
Makeup is good.
I know.
I would keep it, leave it on and
right.
Blow out.
Yeah. A little bit of rouge never hurt anyone.
Certainly not me.
Okay. So athletes and food. First of all, do you want to tell us what you used to do?
Isn't that your job?
Okay, I could have teed it up, but it's so much better from hearing from you.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I was a professional hockey player for 15 years in the World Hockey Association and the NHL.
Okay.
And from 1977 to 1992, an era that did not have much information, direction, coaching when it came to proper diet, sleep, habits, or working out, for that matter.
So none of those important things for an athlete.
None of the things that would actually make you better.
Yeah. Okay. 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 So then you retired and went to law school.
Or forced out of the game and went to law school.
Well, most athletes retire and go to law school.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a pretty common thing.
Not so much.
Pretty common thing. And then you now work with athletes.
I do. I'm the managing director of Octagon's hockey division. We represent more or less 90-plus NHL hockey players.
Okay.
We have agents around the world, recruit players from around the world.
Okay.
So we have a broad understanding of today's athlete.
Mm-hmm. And you also, the firm, the agency represents other sports.
All the other sports.
All of them.
Yeah. Almost all of them. All the team sports and many individuals from individual sports and or team sports that are not they're more for their celebrity or for their marketing opportunities.
What about equestrians?
No equestrians as yet.
It's a shame. It's your loss. Okay, so, Dad, what did you used to eat? Tell us about your kind of like, you know, what your diet was like, what your conditioning was like back like 100 years ago when you played.
Okay, well, my dietary
consumption pattern.
Consumption pattern, sure, was just an extension of how I grew up. And as you well know, your grandmother was way ahead of the curve on. I don't know if it, certainly sourcing locally,
mm-hmm.
Probably organic,
mm-hmm.
You know, we had a balanced diet, lots of vegetables, fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was considered dessert in our house.
Yeah,
fruit.
Great.
And then a balance of everything else, whether it was carbohydrates, proteins. So that's still the foundation of any good diet, is the balance. But where athletes or dietitians have taken it, mm-hmm. To a much higher level is actually taking the food and saying, okay, this is fuel. This is, you're not eating it because you like it, or
right.
that it tastes delicious, or because a lot of the times that's going to have things in it that are you know, wasted calories, if you will.
Like sugar
or cream, and
mm-hmm.
all the fat stuff.
All
the good stuff.
Yeah.
But the athletes, so my diet was still Mediterranean-based, not a lot of fat,
mm-hmm.
not fried foods. And
homemade.
And homemade.
Right.
Yes.
And very much kind of following your dad. My grandfather was an immigrant, right?
Yes.
And so kind of followed what people ate in Italy.
Well, and when they immigrated to Canada, they were, you know, they immigrated during the Depression. And, you know, my father would say they didn't realize there was a depression because they had 5 acres and they grew their own vegetables,
yeah,
and
wow.
they had a cow, and that was, you know, that
wow.
was the whole nine yards, right? They just, they were almost self-sustainable. They were
yeah.
sustainable or self-sufficient. So where we fell apart, though, in understanding what it takes to get yourself ready, you know, through diet to play is, you know, our diet was, or our pregame meal was at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for an 8 o'clock at night game, right? Which is
yeah.
like the spread is way too far, too many hours in advance. And the idea
was huge.
Yeah. And the idea was that, you know, you had a steak. That's what we ate for a pregame meal. I mean, it's just
Jesus.
Like, it's just wrong, right? So, so then you just kind of pieced it together, you know. And for me, I would eat at 1 o'clock in the afternoon a 16-ounce porterhouse steak.
Oh my God.
And probably a half a pound of pasta in some form.
Easily.
Yeah.
I remember, I've never seen a plate bigger, you know, a plate of pasta yeah. bigger.
But if I didn't, you know, you're in your 20s and
yeah.
early 30s, if you didn't eat like that much, then, you know, you were starving because you're eating it too far in advance. So.
Yeah.
You know, there are books that came along, you know, at that time or shortly, you know, in the 90s, I guess, or late 80s, and it was called Eat to Win. And it got back into this idea that food is fuel, and
mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to, you know, to have the food that you've eaten convert at game time into fuel, into glycogen that you can use.
Yeah.
So that came into the game, I'm going to say early 90s, right when I was retiring. And my last year, we actually had a dietitian when I was playing in Washington, and, you know, she came in and she did a blood workup on everybody, and, you know, she came back to, in my meeting with her, she, you know, I was slightly anemic and dehydrated, and you know, my red blood cells count was way low, and
yeah.
you know, so I was iron
deficient.
You were
a mess.
Yeah, I was a mess. But that's just how you just survived, right? You didn't. So then that's the difference today. So you have players who are and people teams that are investing in dietitians, and they produce. So if you go into an NHL locker room now for practice, there's breakfast. So
mm-hmm.
they have teams employ a chef that's at least going to cook, you know, a breakfast and a lunch after practice, and then they're on their own for dinner. But the idea is that you're you know, your most important meal. Now, this wasn't a problem for me because it's how I grew up. Your most important meal is the first meal, breakfast. And then what they want to do immediately after practice is to get their protein back into them. So they'll have shakes and so forth, and then they'll have a lunch for them afterwards. So they're trying to make it, they being teams, trying to make it as their athletes as efficient as they can possibly be, at least through the diet portion of it. For the athletes themselves, you know, there's in the last 30 years is a great push to understand the physiology and what it takes to propel the, you know, the athlete and make him efficient. And so the training is I can't even say it's night and day. It's a starker difference than that from when I played. And how you train, and even that has evolved, right, into being you know, more functional in your movement and away from static, you know, weightlifting that associated with machines. So it's body weight and you know, you're really building you know, the athleticism in the athlete through his training. And from a dietary standpoint, he's you know, being educated into you know, what's going to keep him lean,
or her.
I had to get that. That's not funny.
It's kind of funny.
Jesus.
So that's the you know, the process is that players are regardless of gender are functioned on or focused rather on body mass index, and that's going to help them be efficient. And the analogy that we'd use is you know, carry a 10-pound weight jacket around.
Yeah.
You know, by the end of the day, that's what, you know, 10 extra pounds of fat, if your body mass index is out of line, you know, on an athlete, it's going to make you, you know, less efficient, obviously.
Right. But the athletes weren't necessarily heavier, right?
Their body fat was higher, right? Yeah. So her body mass index was, you know, I was somewhere between 7 and 9%. As you get older, they tell you that it's higher just because you're older. I never quite understood that, but the idea there's a theory that, you know, you should be 10% because there's a lot of reserve that you need over the course of a season when you're playing hockey. You're playing 3-4 games a week and over a 6-month period. So, you know, it isn't uncommon for players to be at 10%, and if they're not in better shape, you know, they can be, you know, teen, you know, 13, 14, some guys 15.
Quelle horreur.
Yeah. It's just their body type can carry more fat than other people.
I mean, I know that I'm at the 7%.
No.
Right.
But, you know, back to gender, there's a distinction.
Even David from the other room is shaking his head on that one.
There's a distinction between genders.
Yeah.
And females, I don't think, can get.
Women have like an extra layer of subcutaneous fat.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. It's really annoying.
Yeah. So, but the idea is that you're looking to become efficient, and your efficiencies come by better life habits, right? Which is training, dietary, and sleep. And some teams have a sleep coach.
A sleep coach?
To help players adjust to time changes.
Jeez.
So the players that played, you know, the secret, the quiet, the secret that everybody knows in the NHL, for that matter, or any of the sports, is it's much easier to play on the East Coast than it is on the West Coast because of the travel distance and time zone that you're forced to experience. So it's a very real issue for West Coast teams when they have to travel, you know, east. They're going to travel east more than the eastern teams will travel west.
Even 3 hours? That to me is like really, you know.
No, it is. It's 3 hours was a difficult adjustment for me going. And for me, it was always going west, where most people have that issue coming east.
Right, because you lose time.
But if I'm in L.A., I'm going to wake up at, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning because it's, you know, it's 7 or 8 o'clock and, you know, in the East Coast, right? And it's, and I couldn't really get away from that. I mean, try as you might, stay up later, go to bed, or I, you know, it just didn't.
Is this I feel like the athletes today, what you're describing, like, are they a little soft? I mean, come on, you know, like, I'm going to help you, Jen, with your sleep.
Jen,
you know?
If you'd like to go out to practice one day, I can arrange that for
all
you.
Right, and
you,
all right.
You'll gain firsthand knowledge.
I mean, I do have 7% body fat, so sure. I feel like...
You're going to need 37% body fat to absorb the practice.
Shock, yeah. Okay.
No, it's not about being soft. It's about being more efficient.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah,
here's the analogy. Here's the analogy.
I hope it's a sports one.
Well, not quite, but it's related to sports. You know, we can go back in time, and if you went to see a psychologist, people looked at you like, you know, what's the matter with you?
Ah.
But, of course, you know, mental health is...
Very important.
And in the mainstream now.
Yes.
And so is this.
Right.
You know, sleep habits are incredibly important. And in fact, you know, I mean, just think of the sleep clinics that people, you know, for whatever, you know, is interrupting their sleep. In fact, if you study, and you can't quote me, but something along the lines, if you're not getting 5 or 6 hours of sleep a night uninterrupted, it's like you go and drive your car, it's like being impaired.
Really? Yeah, I believe that.
And that is so, you know, you just can't the athlete will actually, you know, fight through it, right?
No,
because they're just conditioned to do that, right? But they're not as efficient, and they're not going to be, so therefore they're not playing to their potential, and they certainly can't do it through, you know, 8 months of the season.
Right. Yeah, it's very long. People don't realize how long a hockey season is.
Well, and just really almost any season. I mean, even you know, if you're skiing, you're going through a schedule, but you're trying to get to the World Championships, and you're trying to peak at that time. But you know, it's coming at the end, and you know, you're just, if you're not efficient, then the longer the season goes, however that length is, you will become less efficient. You know,
your performance will suffer.
Performance will become less as the season goes on.
Okay, we're going to take a really quick commercial break. But when we get back, nope, that's it. Okay, we're going to take a really quick commercial break and hear a word from our sponsors, but we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
I don't think there's anybody worthy to run this company but the people who built it. I have employees who've been with me for more than 30 years and plus. Each and every one of them deserves to be an owner. That's just the way it ought to be, and that's just the way it is.
This is Bob Moore. He and his wife, Charlie, started Bob's Red Mill almost 4 decades ago. Today, they offer one of the largest lines of organic whole grain foods in the country. And in 2010, on his 81st birthday, Bob gifted ownership of the company to his employees.
I'd received plenty of offers to buy my company over the years, but selling out never felt like the right thing to do. When the time comes to let someone else run this show, I can't imagine selling it to a stranger. Giving the company to my hardworking employees just feels right.
The company now has an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP. Stock is put in a retirement plan for all of its employees. When employees retire, the company buys back their shares. According to the National Center for Employee Ownership, about 11,000 companies in the U.S. currently run as ESOPs.
It just shows how much faith and trust Bob has in us.
That's Bo Thomas, the company's engineer and maintenance superintendent. He's been with Bob's Red Mill for over 27 years and has put his 4 children through college in the process.
For all of us, it's more than just a job. And obviously, it's the same way for Bob, too.
Bob is still very active in the company. He's the president and CEO, and you'll find him working at the mill just about every day. Because when you love something this much, you want to be a part of it.
Well, I may have given them the company, but the boss part is still mine.
Bob's Red Mill is committed to sharing only the freshest, best-tasting whole grain foods on the planet. Learn more about their mission of good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
And we're back on Eating Matters, where today we're talking with my dad, Mike Liute, about his experience with how high-performing athletes used to eat compared with how and what they eat today. So dietary advice over the course of, the, you know, 20, 30 years has really changed. I mean, quite a bit, right? I mean, you understand that, like, we need to eat more vegetables, right? That's pretty much a constant. But there was, for instance, the low-fat craze in the 90s. And then a little bit more recently, a shift away from saturated fat, although people are, in the dietetic community is kind of now thinking that saturated fat isn't as bad for you. And sodium, of course, is like a huge public health hazard right now. So have you found, in just like your experience with the game over the past 20, 30 years, have you found that the way athletes eat food and their food patterns have sort of trended with dietary advice, the dietary advice?
Well, they've changed their method of eating for sure. I mean, they're, but not to the point where they're concerned with their sodium intake, right?
Right.
The one thing,
yeah.
The one difference with an athlete is that 5,000 calories in a day is nothing, right?
Yeah,
they're gonna burn through that. First of all, the athletes, regardless of gender,
yes,
are under 35 for the most part.
Yep.
So they're at that peak metabolic point in their life,
mm-hmm.
And the more strenuous the the off ice on ice combination, they can burn through the calories without a problem, but. There's simple things like, you'll see them eating, not only chicken, but lean chicken, taking the skin off a chicken, right?
Yeah.
And really reducing, some of the things, a lot of the things that make food taste good.
Yeah.
Right. Because they don't want they don't want to add to their body fat, right? Or they're trying to stay lean. And that's where you start thinking of food as fuel, right? So and that's all it is, right? You're staying hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
You're eating food that, calories that will convert to energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't anything more than that, right? Now, that doesn't mean when they get to the off season, the chicken wings don't pop back on the menu,
mm-hmm.
Players are very cognizant of what they're eating and when they're eating it and how much they're eating it. Although, as I said, as you well know, right?
Yeah.
Seeing athletes eat at our house, they'll chew through a lot of food.
I mean, not even athletes, just me.
Just
I remember, by the way, like food as fuel was a mantra in our household forever. And, I grew up with a mom who cooked 3 meals a day, and they were very, very healthy and delicious. But, food is fuel. It was something that we definitely understood. And I remember this one time I brought home a muffin, and which obviously has no nutritional value, right? It's sugar and it's delicious. And, that didn't go over so well.
Well, you start from the beginning. When you were infants,
mm-hmm.
your mother made all of the baby food. When she introduced food groups, it was sweet potatoes, it was sweet potato that was pureed down to,
right.
You at 6 months could eat it, right? Or carrots or green beans.
Yeah.
And, so that it's the introduction of food at an early age, you acquire the taste and texture for it and it just becomes a way of life. It's,
mm-hmm.
So that's not always true, and I would say that with the canned baby foods, you're probably getting a little sugar and sodium more than what you have. I mean, there's a reason your mom didn't do it, right?
Yeah.
Other than she could leave and I could produce lunch because it was
children.
Yeah, it was 2 ice cube trays. It's
genius.
It
was already ready to go.
It was all ready to go. Just pop it out. And
you had it easy.
Yeah, just warm it up.
Yeah. So back to the muffin.
Well, the muffin, it's not that it didn't go over big. I think I remember that.
It went over really badly.
Right. We took it away from you and I ate it.
Yeah. It's probably true. I think I stormed out of the house and you.
It was okay.
Good times.
Yeah.
Such good times.
I don't know. I don't remember that.
All right. So I want to I know I'm all over the place, but we're just chatting. We're just chatting here. There's this one story that I think is really great, and it's that I also almost don't believe it, but you, during one game, lost a lot of weight. So kind of going back to the idea that athletes had no idea how to eat a long time ago. Can you tell us about
happened? We were playing, we're in the playoffs, and we played, it was at that time, it was a ridiculous schedule. And we had played five games in 7 nights plus overtime. So I think functionally close to 6 games in 7 nights, which is nuts. And
wow.
And then we had a day off.
What team were you on?
In St. Louis. And you know, it was early in my career, so I was, you know, maybe 25 or 26 years old. And or even younger than that. Actually, I was younger than that, 24. And we were we had one day off, and then we played another 4 and 5. But in the, you know, in the first two games of that second 4 and 5, I would play on back-to-back nights. I would weigh in almost every day at 190 pounds. And if I had to play a second night, I would come back that next game, and I would weigh in at 189 pounds. I'd be 1 pound light. And that was just, you know, maybe, you know, it was the way it was.
Yeah.
But that particular game, the building, the electricity in the building in St. Louis was out. They blew a transformer, so there was no AC in the building all day, and it was 80 degrees in St. Louis. And by the time we played the game, you know, it really didn't have a chance to cool off. And then you put 18, 19,000 people in the building.
Plus your equipment at the time.
Right, and it just everything. And we played to I weighed out after the game. Starting at 189, I think I was 178 or something like that, 177.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was, you know, and consequently, you know, we were in command right up until the third period, and then as a goalie, you just fell apart. They scored 3 goals and we lost.
Wow.
And you know, but you just can't play losing that much weight. You just can't. Yeah. You know, not efficient. You're not
hydrated.
Your
body stops.
But that was in the NHL. There was no water on the nets.
No way.
For a goalie. So the only time that a goalie would have a drink during the game is if the other team took a penalty and you would scurry to the bench during a delayed call and have a quick drink. And other than that, you know, you would play, you know, the period, which is going to take 45 minutes without drinking. Right?
What?
Other than that one or two. So, you know, to prepare for that, you would practice without water so that you weren't craving it. You just sort of, that was normal. In your mind, it was normal, but, you know, the effect on your body was completely abnormal.
When did they start putting water bottles in the back of the net? And by the way, why wouldn't they think of that? That seems like a no-brainer.
Well, but that's back, if you go back 30 years or 35 years, I mean, football teams would practice in the heat and there'd be no water, because if you drank water, to your earlier point on sleep, mm-hmm. right? If you had to drink water, you were soft. You don't need water, right? So, I mean, it was the same reason why they said you have to eat steak you know, a pregame meal. It was just because that's what somebody said back in the day, and
that's what the men do.
Yeah, well, they just continued the myth, right?
Yeah.
But you know, and so the game is much better off for it,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and I'm sure that the first people who started to turn their mind to this were probably women who said this is not smart.
Well, we're smarter.
Yeah, without question.
Yeah, obviously. All right. So last question before we wrap up. In your experience with other athletes, you know, in your current role, do you find, and to the extent you can answer this, do you find that other sports require athletes to eat certain ways, different ways?
I think that each sport has its rhythm. Mm-hmm. I would imagine. I mean, and they're all a little bit different. I mean, basketball and hockey are most aligned in that they're playing an 82-game season. It happens at the same time of the year. Baseball's 162 games, and that's a different type of sport. You know, they don't have the practice time that we have, mm-hmm. but they play every day, right? So that's a different requirement, right? And it isn't.
Baseball does.
Yeah, baseball is. Yeah, and it's a physical sport, right? If you're the catcher.
You know, I'm gonna go ahead and disagree with you on that. There are a lot of fat baseball players.
Well, you know, it's still a physical game in that you're doing it every day,
and the game
lasts for 3 hours. So just go stand out in the field, you know, for 3 hours, you know, whatever.
I could do that.
I know, but you know, it's not that it doesn't come with a toll, right? And
uh-huh.
and actually, the guys in the outfield, right, are not fat.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. So they get, you know, they do like three sprints a game.
Well, you know, whatever, they're athletes and they might be more skilled than
technical
cardio,
skilled.
But,
yeah.
The point is that they have an everyday
physical
schedule,
job. Yeah.
And they're going to eat different for that than maybe we are. And they're going to have double headers, right? So they play two games in a day.
Yeah.
And football plays once a week, and they play mostly in the afternoons, although, you know, in the last 10 years, it's gone from a Sunday afternoon game, you know, Monday night for one game, that it's spread all the way back to Thursday. So their rhythm is a little bit off, where it's not on the same day every week.
Right, they have to change.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that there's differences between the sports in how you're going to prepare for every game. However, it's the same objective. You're trying to get to the game with, you know, enough fuel to get you through the game.
Enough glycogen.
Yeah. So it's no different than a race car. It needs enough fuel to get around the track before, you know, and hit the checkered flag without running out of gas. And that's what an athlete's trying to do.
And before, it seems like there was more of a focus on protein in advance to kind of fuel your tank versus these simple carbohydrates that you can break down and use immediately.
Yes. And I think that a lot of athletes, like I certainly did too, even though, you know, we'd have that meal, you know, I would have a nap and then I'd go to, you know, at 4 o'clock, I'm eating, you know, some simple carbohydrates, toast or something of that nature, just to, you know, have
just
something
to cap off the steak.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Think about the playoffs when we would play that particular year. I think we played 13 games in a little over 2 weeks, 16 days, 17 days. So that's 13 16-ounce porterhouse steaks in 2 weeks.
I don't even
know. That's when your mother put an end to that.
The kibosh.
We're going with fish and chicken.
Yeah. See, women are smarter.
I'm not arguing.
Okay. Well, we are going to have to wrap it up for today. But, Dad, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, of course it is.
A pleasure.
Pleasure was all yours.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Also, big thanks to our sponsors for your generous support. Our show is produced with help from Taylor Lenzett, and show music is by Tim Archer. Thank you to our engineer, Vitor Hirscht. All episodes of Eating Matters are available on the Heritage Radio Network website or as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe. Like, share, follow, and post to us on Facebook, and find us on Twitter at Eat Matters HRN. I'm Jenna Liute, and thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. and I hope you saved a little room for dessert.